Hello, this is Tony Westwood, and that was Shostakovich's Tahiti Trot, a light-hearted exercise in orchestration, and a suitable signature tune for a series of programmes exploring how musical instruments are used by composers in their orchestral compositions. I have chosen to chart the way by taking an instrument or a related set of instruments and giving examples of how they have been used alone, in groups, or in combination with other instruments over the centuries since the formation of the Baroque orchestras of Bach and Handel. One rule is no concertos, except if we're not listening to the solo instrument, and no quasi-concertos where an orchestral instrument is given an inordinately large part in an orchestral work. Each programme will end with an orchestral piece that an orchestral instrumentalist or group might feel that the composer had got just right for their instrument or instruments, starting our series with the flute. There are two reasons for this choice. One, the flute part is always at the top of an orchestral score, unless there's a piccolo part not covered by a second or third flute player. And the second reason is because the flute introduces the famous tune of Ravel's Bolero. Almost every instrument of the orchestra has a go at that tune. You'll hear them all through this series. I hope that every listener who follows this guide will be able to sing, hum or whistle the whole of Ravel's Bolero tune by the end of the series. There will be a test. In general, when orchestrating, composers need to know not only the range of notes the instrument can play, lowest to highest note, but also the differences in sound that the instrument produces across the range, known as the instrument's register. He or she must also be very aware of how it will sound in the context of the whole orchestra. If the composer is thoughtful and remembers that there are people playing these instruments, issues of breathing or having a break from sawing away with a bow should come into play too. So to the flute as our first instrument. Taking the piano as a reference point, the flute's lowest note is middle C. From there, the composer has just over three octaves to play with. So, a good range, but you have to be careful. The lowest notes don't project well, and the top ones tend to be screechy. And asking a player to play these high notes softly is really not fair. Illustrations coming up. But let's start with Shostakovich and his deployment of the flute in Tahiti Trot. The flute gets to play the tune expressionlessly twice in the middle of its range, and that's about it. And even there it shares the limelight with a tinkling glockenspiel, so not much for the flautist to write home about there. The only other time the flute player has anything substantial to do, it is upstaged by its smaller relative, the piping piccolo. Let's tune ourselves into the sound of the flute, where there is no competition for the limelight. It's solo bits from Ravel's Bolero. As I mentioned earlier, the flute is the first instrument to be given the tune. Here it is, illustrating the lower registers of the flute's range, from the beginning, as the mesmerizing tattoo begins on the side drum. The second time the flute is chosen to play the tune, it plays in its higher range, while below it, a muted trumpet also plays the tune softly. Generally, the flute plays in the high register in orchestral terms, and is thus often heard quite clearly in the orchestra. When the whole woodwind section plays chords together, the flute sits at the top, as in this example from Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream Overture, where wind chords top and tail the work. The flute at the top of Mendelssohn's Fairy Tale Woodwind Chord. And to follow, here is a sequence from the slow movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony that illustrates this top note woodwind use of the flute. For reasons unknown at the start of this section, although he has two flutes at his disposal in his orchestra, Beethoven uses the principal oboe, playing in parallel just below our hero the flute. If the conductor is not careful, the more penetrating oboe can eclipse the more modest flute, but not in this rendition. The flute and oboe are joined by two clarinets, mirroring their higher colleagues. Up and down, down and up. The flute, in its usual top position in the woodwind band, in an excerpt from the second movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And now an example of the use of flutes in an accompanying role. Mendelssohn uses two flowing flutes to add a wonderful sound to the main theme of the slow movement of his Italian symphony. Here is how the theme sounds without the flutes. And here it is again, and continuing with the addition of the flutes, and then the same thing for the second half of the movement's main theme, Poetry in Motion. Later in this movement, the flutes play a similar accompanying role very softly at the bottom of their range. Mendelssohn pares down the orchestra to make sure that they are heard in this very difficult flute tessitura. A tessitura is not the name of the flute player, in case you haven't heard that word before. It refers to the comfortable range for a singer or an instrument. Here are those flutes working hard to be heard. In case you were wondering what the instruments stomping along all the time in those excerpts were, they were the cellos and double basses. They get their own programmes later in this series. Let's stick with two low flutes. In the lightest of orchestral colours, the Czech composer Smetana gives them a leading role as a rivulet setting off from the mountains to become the mighty Vltava River in Bohemia. And as they gain momentum, two clarinets join the flow. And continuing, the cellos take up the flowing theme as the river picks up its pace. But now, after a little break, the flutes join the violins and oboe as the tune we love propels the river towards Prague. See if you can pick up the sound of the flutes as they join in, now melded with the violins. Later in this piece, we hear the flutes as water again, this time water reflecting the moonlight. We start this excerpt with the sound of the other woodwind instruments building up a chord, this time not topped by the flutes, because they have watery business to prepare for. Thank you. By the end of that section of Volta by Smetana, we've left the nighttime hours as we heard the flutes race back into full spate. So that's the end of Smetana's tone poem Volta, at least for the purposes of this programme and of the flute as a watery instrument. Not surprisingly, given its range and sound, the orchestral flute also takes on the role of birds, though not the cuckoo, that's reserved for the clarinet. Birds real, as in Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf. Symbolic, flying above the post-apocalyptic pre-resurrection scenes from Mahler's Second Symphony. The piccolo joins the flute, bringing his trills to the martial sounds of horn and trumpet below. The flute, hovering over apocalyptic scenes in Mahler's Second Symphony. Of birds real, for the flute to represent, the nightingale comes top of the flute pops.
And
The Nightingale sang for the moon's bright rays from HMS Pinafore by Gilbert and Sullivan. Sung by Lovelorn Rafe, answered by both flute and a kindly sailor's chorus, though you might have noticed the clarinet doing its nightingale thing there too. Trilling sopranos are likely to sing duets with nightingales, as Donizetti's Lucia de Lammermoor discovered.
Splendor in tua, e coi mistra.
Lucia de Lammermoor, also known as Anamofo, being mocked, I think, by a nightingale, played by the flute as she descends into madness. Here is a nightingale joining avian forces with a quail and a cuckoo. Herr Beethoven had to choose between flute as water and flute as bird here. You might be able to work out which he chose in this excerpt from Scenes by a Brook, the second movement of his Pastoral Symphony. Beethoven giving the sound of a nightingale to the flute at the end of the second movement of his Pastoral Symphony, and also putting the flute at the top of the woodwind chord that ends that movement. Let's move on to bird's symbolic now. Bird as spirit, hail to thee, blithe spirit, as Tennyson saw. A marvellous spiritual moment occurs in the slow opening section of Brahms' First Symphony, final movement. The flute high in the sky, hovering like hope. A horn calls, but the flute draws our eyes and our hearts. Brahms' wonderful orchestration from his First Symphony. Likewise Grieg in the third movement of his Piano Concerto. A rapturous moment using a high flute from Grieg's Piano Concerto. Starting an orchestral flute solo early in a piece from high up in its range, or we could call it high fluting, I suppose, is not easy for a player. Well, composers don't care. Here are some examples. Vaughan Williams asking the flute to play a high F as the first note we hear in his Fantasia on Greensleeves. Unfair. Prokofiev asks for a high A, even higher. Very softly and sweetly, he adds. This is the slow movement theme from his classical symphony, first played by the violins, also unfairly high as a starting note for them. Prokofiev, Classical Symphony. And now, high A-flat on the flute at the start of Death and Transfiguration by Richard Strauss, who ought to have known better. But it is another spirit moment for the flute, so one can understand why feeling overcame practicality. By starting this excerpt with the rasping sounds of a dying man, one can appreciate the elements of respite and hope that the flute phrase brings, soon copied by the clarinet. That piece, Death and Transfiguration by Richard Strauss, and the Greensleeves that we heard earlier, link the flute with a harp. The link was also there in the moonlight Vultiva scene earlier. This is not an uncommon orchestral trope. Enter Georges Bizet. Thank you. flute and harp in perfect pairing, playing the minuet from L'Alésienne Suite by composer Georges Bizet. I wonder if you noted the change in timbre when the oboe joined the flute in playing the second half of the tune when it was repeated. The same combination is at the core of fellow Frenchman Claude Debussy's representation of the lazy freedom of the afternoon pipe playing, not pipe smoking, though one can't be sure what's in that pipe in this music, Fawn. Two flutes, two harps, leading the sound painting in Debussy's La Rue Midi d'un Faune. They are also there, along with the oboes and French horns, and tiny cymbals at the fade-out. Three flutes holding a low E major chord as the double basses pronounce the last note of the Faun's lazy, Debussy-orchestrated afternoon. It's time to wake up from our narcosis. More French music, Ravel. He gives the flute section a hell of a workout in his Daphnis and Chloe Suite No. 2. Here you can hear, amongst other gymnastics, the full range of the flute in one long descending scale, though the piccolo starts the descending scale and the very lowest notes we hear at the end are from the bass flute, a cousin of the standard flute. low notes from the bass flute ending a virtuoso section for the flutes, briefly including the piccolo, in Daphnis and Chloe Suite No. 2 by Maurice Ravel. I have planned that each Knowing the Score programme should finish with an extended piece in which the instrument in question is showcased by the orchestrating composer. That Ravel will have to suffice here, because I want to end here with a piece that flute players hate. It is famous, it is beautiful, but for the first flute in the orchestra, it involves playing the four notes A, B, B, A endlessly. It's not by A, B, B, A, ABBA, it's by Jacques Offenbach. No thank you for the music from the flute here. Actually, one can play A, B, B, A with one hand on the flute while writing a letter or one's memoirs with the other, staying awake and counting bars, of course. A, B, B, A, here we go. Death in Venice, as far as the orchestral flute player is concerned, the barcarolle from The Tales of Hoffmann by Offenbach for everyone else. And that's our Tutti Flutti for this time. I hope you've enjoyed this first Knowing the Score programme. Next week, it's the flute's neighbours on their right from where we see them from the audience, the oboes in the spotlight. See you then, I hope. Goodbye for now from the orchestral flutes, from Knowing the Score, and from me, Tony Westwood.